Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGBM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgbm.org. It's time for Desert Oracle Radio Replay. I'm Roxana. The full moon is coming up on the 10th. It's the buck moon, when deer antlers are pretty much full grown, so some say. Others might call it the feather molting moon or the salmon moon. The same moon by any name. Last week, Ken Lane produced this first episode with an urgent message in light of that big bill in D.C. The words continue to be relevant because certain people continue to try to sell off our public lands. From June 26th, 2025, here is "Don't Let Them Take Our Western Public Lands."
Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. Summer solstice has passed, and here we are in the second half of the year, just like that. And the beautiful but cruel Mojave, these next 3 months are the tough ones. I don't need to tell you that. You get used to it after a decade or two if you don't give up and die first. But the seasons do have their various advantages, and in the high desert, the summer nights, at least, are usually pleasant. Good for having people over, grill some steaks, speak freely, drink in hand, beneath the sky of stars. And keep an eye out for those enchanting golden lights, the ones that have appeared in our high desert skies on recent nights. Not flares, not planes, not fireworks, but soft golden orbs. Several seen playing over the mountain ridge between Yucca Valley and Pioneer Town. I've seen them myself. There was another pretty one over the northwest corner of the national park. I saw that one too. Was walking out to shut the gate for the night, and there it was, right in front of me, a golden ball of light. And then it arced gracefully over maybe 5 degrees of sky toward the sun, west, not east. Then it faded out to nothing. I don't know what they are exactly. But people living around mountains and marshes and other natural places have been reporting such things for centuries. Unaccountable lights, as William Butler Yeats called them when he and his friends walked a dark road in rural Ireland more than a century ago, and saw these mysterious orbs flying around the baffled cattle at twilight. I like to think of these golden orbs as the whimsical spirit of this place, the spirit of place, the place of spirits. I do not see such things with any frequency. It has been nearly 3 years since I witnessed such lights over our Mojave High Desert mountains and foothills. Despite walking every evening, every day that I'm here, I've been logging them, these strange visions and other such uncanny things over the past 20 years or so. If you don't write it down, even if you're with other people, other witnesses, well, it just gets forgotten. It's a mystery. The actor Kurt Russell talked about this on a TV interview you can find on the computer. How he completely forgot that he was the one aviator to report his encounter with the Phoenix Lights on his approach to Sky Harbor Airport in March 1997. And he did not think about it until a year or two later, and not on his own. He says he got home from work one day and his wife, Goldie Hawn, was watching a UFO show on television, one of those unsolved mysteries type TV shows. And Kurt Russell hears the TV narrator read off Kurt Russell's tail number, the number on his plane. His teenage son was in the plane too, and was the first to notice the big bright lights hovering over the Phoenix airport. But then the son forgot too. How do you forget that? Such moments do not fit into our time, so it seems. And so we are compelled to forget about them. But if you're lucky enough to live out in the open country, you will see such things eventually. Maybe. If you got the right kind of eyes.
Desert Oracle Radio.
For myself and so many others who live in the rural American West, life is just not right when we're not surrounded by open and scenic space. Not just any open and scenic space, it must be a land of mountains and pure air, of regular encounters with the wild beasts, the wild birds, and maybe the wild spirits too. It is not silence we demand, but the natural sounds of the natural landscape wind through trees and brush, the charming chatter of quail, the glorious song of the coyote coming from several points over many miles, and the sound of our own voice lifted in song, walking a lonesome trail, makes you feel good, and maybe it keeps the mountain lion away. Who knows? Maybe we work with livestock on open range, herding sheep and goat to summer mountain meadows like the old Basque shepherds still do, in isolated pockets of the big mountains. Maybe rounding up the cattle once a year, maybe we take visitors out to see rare sights, herding tourists like cattle, or go fly fishing on the broad but shallow streams after the spring melt. With the constant barrage of news that has little to do with our life in the open West, it's easy to tune out the schemes that are aimed at you, at me, at the people like you of noble human spirit who require the open landscape, mountain and desert and wild river. So here's the bad news, if you haven't already heard it. I promise I won't make a habit of bad news. One of the senators Utah sent to Washington has slipped in some very dangerous legal language into the big federal budgeting bill, language that's vague enough to allow the beginning of the end, the beginning of the sell-off of our Western public lands. including national forests. Not including national parks, etc., but very much including Bureau of Land Management and Forest Service lands. In fact, that's what this senator, Mike Lee, titled this section of the Senate legislation, Mandatory Disposal of Bureau of Land Management Land and National Forest System Land. For what? Oh, let's see, for housing. Housing of what? Obviously, there's no intention to build affordable housing in isolated western lands, roadless areas, canyons, mountains, high desert plains, hours from the cities. And the BLM already has well-known and oft-used methods of turning over public land parcels to developers when those developments are part of existing metropolitan areas, as has happened around Las Vegas for many decades. So what's this about? To my great delight, people and organizations very often on very different sides of the various public lands battles have found common ground in robust opposition to any such scheme to sell off our national birthright, our western frontier, the great American West, as preserved today by the works, words, and deeds of great Americans such as John Muir, Theodore Roosevelt, John Wesley Powell, Stephen T. Mather, Abraham Lincoln. People who, because of their position in the world, have played an enormous role in the creation of national forest reserves, wildlife refuges, the national parks and monuments system, and the vast public lands of the Intermountain West that are much less known and much more loved by the people who live, work, hunt, fish, hike, camp, birdwatch, mountain bike, rock climb, and otherwise make proper use of our wonderful American West in a way that leaves it pristine and wild for the many generations to come. Our old environmental organizations seem paralyzed and baffled and shackled to political purity rules so stringent that they'll take the L on American public lands rather than forge new alliances, especially with mountain state conservatives who have truly blasted this news far and wide, and they're fighting it hard. So that every time you open social media, you see beautiful pictures of the wild backcountry of America, the eternal frontier, if we keep it that way. The rich old boomers on the board of directors of the big enviro orgs, the big donors in Malibu and Martha's Vineyard, well, they're not going to mess up their manicures by engaging with actual rural Western people who don't want to be fenced out of America's wild nature. The executives who run these organizations are no different than the politicians in Washington, which is where the environmental lobbying groups are based too. Necessary, but if you've spent much time in Washington or its expensive suburbs, you understand that those people comprise their own social class, and it has very little overlap with the people who live in remote parts of this big country, in large part to avoid the busybodies and traffic jams of Byzantium. The good news for the moment is that the first version of this Utah Senator's Mandatory Disposal of BLM and Forest Service Lands law is dead for now. There's a secret elf of some kind that has lived beneath the U.S. Capitol for centuries. In the crypt they built for George Washington, and this creature is called the Parliamentarian. It is summoned now and then to get rid of some stinky legislation that caused an uproar. Whether among voters or the far more important class, the big money donors. But little Mike Lee is determined. He's got promises to keep, and they're not to Americans. So he squirted out another version. And to the people of Utah, especially, it's much worse. So go ahead and call your senator's office and be nice to whatever beleaguered intern is answering the phone, the nutline. And just say you're completely against Senator Mike Lee's mandatory disposal of U.S. public lands. Lands administered by the BLM and Forest Service or any other U.S. public lands now or in the future. And you can email too. But in general, don't engage in this kind of stuff too often. It's bad for the soul. It creates a smallness, a pettiness in the human character. To be too concerned about national politics. I've seen this happen. I've watched so many people turn into full-time consumers of political media slop. So I'll change the subject for the sake of poetry. We have been celebrating and mythologizing American public lands since the first issue of Desert Oracle magazine back in 2015 and the first radio broadcast in 2017. Wilderness, national parks and monuments and preserves, national forests and wildlife refuges, and especially the priceless open desert of the Southwest, the federal lands administered by our BLM, our Bureau of Land Mismanagement, but it's better than nothing, isn't it? I remember when the fun rednecks got run out of the land conservation movement back in the 1980s. Earth First, hunters and hard-drinking backcountry guides, Vietnam veterans who liked to let off steam on what was left of the Wild West. Earth First collapsed that way, way back in the late 1980s. The very people who started the intentionally confrontational prankster gang of backwoods weirdos were run out of their own band of pirates for the usual human resources department crimes of thought and behavior, a sign of what was to come. Now, if you know anything at all about rural real estate, you know that such land has much more value when it borders or otherwise has easy access to public lands. To the flora and fauna and mountains and streams and trails. And yes, sometimes this means wealthy people have a collection of vulgar log mansions with those 500 antler chandeliers around choice public lands, near towns with a couple of good restaurants and a Charles Schwab branch office, next to the artisan bakery and the yoga studio. But for 95% of public lands, the bordering properties, if they're not protected U.S. public lands like parks, are farms, ranches, two-lane state highway easements, or proud country folk living off the grid in a trailer on 20 acres of scrub 40 miles from nothing. We need these lands more than ever. These undeveloped public lands in the American West and wherever else they've managed to survive the modern world. And for the very reason that Edward Abbey made very clear a half century ago, we need somewhere to run, to hide, to retreat and regroup. Away from the surveillance cameras, the tracking cookies, the human resources departments. Some of us will be returning to meeting in secret groves, like druids. Without phones, without cameras, on hallowed ground. Nothing else will be trusted. All digital communication is potentially false. All business meetings are prone to targeted airstrikes. God bless America. Let's save some of it. Protect our wild public lands. This is Desert Oracle Radio, and we are in the studio with our friend from up on the mesa, Herb Benham, who performs music around here under the name
Rove.
Rove. R-O-V-E. You can see him around town. You got something coming up?
You know, Ken, I'm taking a little hiatus for the summer because I can't really bear to load my equipment out from my house the 10 feet into my car at the moment.
You're talking about the summer?
Yeah, I'm talking about the desert summer, which this will be my 7th desert summer. You know, I'm from Bakersfield, so I'm no stranger to the heat.
We are in the hottest, driest desert in the Americas. Well, in North America.
Yep.
I guess Atacama is drier.
Where's Atacama?
The South America, where you get the mummies, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We just get swollen dead bodies and, like, Nissans.
Totally. Yeah, I've been feeling a little bit like a mummy. I've got these cracks on my knuckles.
Oh, yeah.
Don't heal up, you know? You start getting, you know, like, is this psoriasis or is just... This is the Mojave, just taking
yes,
the toll.
This is why long before the rest of America became a place where everything was locked up behind smudged, disease-ridden plexiglass in every retailer, Phoenix was long famous for locking up its moisturizer. Yeah.
You forget how bad and how miserable it really is.
Well, I think you have to forget. If you don't forget... You're going to move when the weather's nice. You forget. It's cool. It's beautiful. You can walk during the day. You can get the dog to go for a walk. And I've got to bribe the dog now. It's going to be fine once we get there. The sun's going down.
Can't blame him. Smart dog.
What kind of air conditioners are you using this summer?
So I'm slightly ashamed to say because I know your great affinity and fondness for swamp coolers. I've not turned mine on yet this year because I've just been ripping that good old-fashioned central AC.
Yeah.
I've been using it basically all day and night, so I'm expecting a $500, you know.
Oh, yeah. Bill. Well, that's it. That's the beauty of the swamp cooler. Yeah. If you get it going, you can run a swamp cooler. Well, 10 years ago, this was true, I think. Water and electrical rates have gone up like everything, but 10 years ago $1 a day would power a swamp cooler.
Wow.
Which is pretty wild because a swamp cooler is a different kind of cool. It's moist for one thing, so your skin isn't cracking open quite so much. Your books aren't turning to charred paper as you flip through the pages, and it takes a little finessing. You open up some windows on one side of the house and you crack some on the other side, and it's loud. Ideally, you'd have a couple of different systems. Like, you can't use a swamp cooler in August in monsoon season because you don't want more humidity then. That's not going to help.
That's right. I also remember, you know, every year the first time you turn it on, it blows just a ton of dust and kind of whatever's been like building up in the swamp cooler and sort of even getting through whatever.
Well, you're supposed to service it.
Yeah.
You're supposed to get in there with a hose and a tool to scrape the calcification off the pads and the motor and everything else. There's all these things. I used to have to do that, you know, working for my dad. He had an AC service company. It was called AC Service, in fact.
Aptly named.
Yeah. It wasn't taken in our area. And front of the phone book. That's what you want. That's why you look in your phone. Well, we don't have phone books anymore. We got listeners who are like 35. What is a phone book? Is that like an iPhone that you can read a book on? Or is it something like that? It was this magical thing that would be delivered to your house, your apartment, wherever you were, for free. And it weighed about 3 pounds. Great big things, had yellow pages, white pages, etc. Yellow pages for business, white pages for residential. And you could just open that book up by the letter of the thing you were looking for. And there would be a list of businesses that were in business that year. It worked perfectly.
Yeah, they were incredible. And if there was like a girl you liked at school or something like that, you knew one of her parents' names, or even if you didn't know the names, you could sort of look it up and just be like, okay, you know, Bill, Marcy, okay, I'm going to, you know, that seems like it.
Yeah. I think she lives on this street.
Which now that we're talking about it, you know, in this age, the modern age that we're living in, maybe not the best to have everybody's addresses just, you know.
Probably not. No, now you get People Finder, where they'll show you that for only $25.99 a month.
Right.
You can see how many felony convictions your new Tinder match has, you know. From Amboy to Zizix and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this has been Desert Oracle Radio with soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Listen to us on the radio in Joshua Tree, Z107.7 FM, Friday nights at 10 p.m. Our website, basically unchanged since I built it back in the autumn of 2014, is desertoracle.com. Hit radio for the blog covering every episode of this radio program. There's an old saying, a proverb from the Stoics of ancient Greece, that says a society is great when old men plant trees whose shade they'll never sit in. And that's especially true with Joshua trees. They only grow about 3 inches a year during the first decade, and then it slows down considerably after that. I guess my big old tree was about 150 years old. I was only around for its final half dozen years, so I can't claim to know it really well, but I knew it. But it's hot out there. Watch yourself. Watch your pets. And good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGVM Bozeman Community Radio at 95.9 FM and streaming online at kgvm.org. Our second Desert Oracle Radio episode today came from Ken Lane, July 2nd, 2021. Here is Crooked Rain, Summer Dream.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, and I don't want to start sounding like Al Roker, but good Lord, what a beautiful week we enjoyed between the miserable heat waves. On a number of days up here on the north side of Joshua Tree National Park, it actually rained from the clouds. Mostly a drizzle, but by the middle of the week, it was like spring on the Gulf Coast, the kind of weather that makes you want to have a mint julep. In theory, anyway. In practice, the mint julep is a waste of three good ingredients, bourbon, ice, and fresh mint leaves. It's like somebody put NyQuil in your whiskey. It was sultry and breezy in Palm Springs. The people all out in the plazas and the parks. A 90-degree cloudy midday in Palm Springs is not something you often see in the summer. And it is summer now, officially. Happy solstice. Which always sounds like a threat in this century. Happy solstice. Buckle up. Because what will it be this summer? So thanks be to St. Minerva for the respite in the week after solstice. The weather was more than agreeable. Even the weirdest of my local raven clan, the one I call Weird Annie. Well, even that one seemed to be enjoying the cloudburst. Still the strangest raven call I've ever heard. It's backwards from the standard raven call, like you're playing the tape in reverse. But Weird Annie was up there, flying in circles and as happy as she can be. Still making that sound, though. Anyway, the heat is back. It roasted from Vancouver to Boise, and I guess we hardly noticed in the high desert where it was in the low hundreds, but that's better than the previous heat dome we had down here. The one that up and left for Portland, like so many Californians in recent years. You ever get the sense that what you're allergic to isn't down comforters or the cat or food allergy or whatever? But that what you're allergic to is your life, your way of living, the whole deal from waking up to finally collapsing again? Sometimes it takes moving to a wind-blown desert to figure out that just about everything that blows by is disagreeable to your system. Western juniper, Russian thistle, pretty much anything that falls off or falls onto the human body. Or anything or place or person that a human body comes into contact with. The worst is when you realize that your dreams are being affected. That your dreams are also anxious and forgetful and of uncertain purpose. Because your sleep is not restful. lot of it involves the alarm clock. Whether you allow that phone screaming in your ear like a siren as the first thing you hear when you awake. Imagine being the person who invented the alarm clock. Enjoy hell, buddy. Everybody's got three weird tricks to change your life. From the scam artists on the internet to these therapists who treat you like a troublesome old Volvo or something. You're gonna need to come in every week for the rest of your life. Oh, really? So this isn't going to help? Stop eating this or that food. My $600 meditation program that auto-renews annually. Be grateful, be hurt, be vegan. Be aware of your thoughts. Ignore your thoughts. Get rid of toxic people. Throw out the toxic consumer items in your home. Let's see. TV. Wi-Fi router. This overstock rug that's been off-gassing since Obama was president. Drink more fluids, but don't drink the fluids you enjoy. Etc. And at the end of the day, or the long night of the soul, you are still who you are. A human who is doing the best you can. The main character in your own life. Because you can make a budget, but you can't draw blood from a turnip. As they say at the credit reporting bureaus. The only good advice I've ever heard about getting in a better frame of mind, well, it regards dreaming. And I don't remember who said it, probably a lot of people with common sense. Get enough sleep to dream and give yourself a day or two per week to wake up whenever you wake up. Then you'll remember your dreams. Keep a notebook right there, a dream journal, or whatever you want to call it. You have to scribble it down real fast. And not on the phone, for God's sake, because the phone will never let you do anything without bombarding you with notifications about the bills due and the appointments. And six new TikToks you must see of a cat locked up in somebody's apartment. Pen and paper, when you write it down, you write it into memory. Now it cannot be lost. Some of the best dreams don't mean anything in particular. But you remember them with warmth, with appreciation. They are windows to a different aspect of yourself. And they are worth noting and worth consideration. Sometimes they even announce the future in mysterious little ways. I woke to this dream of walking with the dog on a long ship. Really a barge. But on the open sea, the deck was several feet below the water, a strange design for something you want to keep afloat. A monolithic barge, but with grassy areas and potted plants, apparently intended for walks just like this one. The day was clear and brilliant and breezy. The sun out, but a comfortable temperature. As we reached the stern, there were glass viewing windows and the gray steel around the back of the boat looking into the sea. So we could witness this enormous ocean animal moving just behind the ship, a whale, I thought. But no, then the head goes by. It's an enormous shark, a great white shark, like out of Jaws. Immediately, the ship tilts, and the shark's huge head is right there, managing to just nip the dog before the ship rights again. What was that about, I wondered as I wrote it down. And then I got on with the day. William Burroughs often wrote of his ghost world travel dreams, including long walks through abandoned train stations, airports, always failing to find a place open for breakfast or a person he was supposed to meet or whatever, nobody around. This was something like that, especially the absence of people in these places meant to accommodate lots and lots of people. But I could not recall what Burroughs thought the point might be, something about the world of the dead. That same afternoon, walking with the dog down a long dirt jeep road with a ridge of Mormonty and juniper to our left, a big coyote surprises me by popping out of that brush and onto the long dirt trail, its mouth open in the heavy heat, affording me a rare good look at those surprisingly white, large teeth. The dog missed it entirely, being just behind me, but upwind from the coyote scent. Now that's a lesser prophecy, to be sure, and it is hardly actionable. Which is why nobody ever picks the Powerball numbers through premonitions. It doesn't work that way. It's a symbolic language. Although sometimes, in the case of the unexpected close-up appearance of a shark or a coyote, as I walked not a sandy trail, but a long barge with a sandy-colored wooden deck, with the wilderness and or ocean located just above the deck, which is not a good design for a barge. More like an accidental design of New Orleans. Hope all that water above doesn't come in. Well, sometimes it's pretty easy to recognize the event that the dream announced. When you write down your dreams, they will stay in your mind for a while and your eyes will be open for the consistencies in your waking life. But here's what's kind of goofy about that dream, the day before walking the dog, I was listening to an autobiography of Carl Jung. His late-in-life recollections of the visions and dreams had shaped both his inner life and his professional work. And he was talking about a prophetic dream involving his late father arriving, but treating his son with distracted irritation and demanding some professional help regarding marriage. At that very moment, far away, the younger Jung's mother was dying. His parents had a difficult relationship, and it seems it was about to resume on some level many years after the elder Jung's death. So the elder Jung hoped his pioneering psychoanalyst son might have figured out how to make marriage a happier occupation, as it was apparently about to resume. Our dreams are rarely messages compelling a person to take a specific action. Make a journey, like in The Hobbit or on Zeppelin 4. They can be that, sometimes. And the Reader's Digest of my youth were filled with tales of ESP notices of a loved one fading away. A psychic variation of what the Welsh call death candles. Also a very weird kind of thing to leave around hospital waiting rooms, which is the only place I ever saw Reader's Digest. But most of the time, on most occasions, if a dream is relevant to your daily life, relevant to something about to occur, but for lots of us, for me anyway, I don't need the operating instructions. I'm just glad the receiver is still working. Listen, next weekend, we will be performing some live shows at Theater 29. That's in 29 Palms near the headquarters of Joshua Tree National Park. So we won't have a new radio show next week. But after that, we will have a bunch. We will get through the summer together. Together yet completely alone, as the pandemic slogan said. What that means is I have to get through some of this mailbag before the postcards and the letters fade completely from the sun blasting into the studio here in the mornings, when I'm hiding in the underground tortoise bunker. If you'd like to drop us a line, the postal address is P.O. Box 1735, Joshua Tree, California. And speaking of mail, we just sent out a pile of the new Desert Oracle vinyl bumper stickers to our Patreon supporters. And Megan says the stickers are available on our website now, desertoracle.com. This one's from Kyle in Berkeley talking about the postcards we try to send out from Joshua Tree. It's a postcard about a postcard. I received your postcard. Thanks for the note. It's good to receive physical proof once in a while that the world out there does exist and is not just a digitally crafted simulation. I've listened to your broadcast and collected your periodicals for some years. Let's see. As an artist myself, there are moments in the process of creating where I catch a fleeting glimpse of clarity. A brief moment when I see around the corner, cut through the everyday noise of existence, and feel like I understand what I'm doing. Thanks for the letter, Kyle. Which is a letter and not a postcard. I apologize for referring to it as a postcard about a postcard. It's a letter about a postcard. And about the fleeting glimpses of clarity. That's the point of it all, whether artist or biologist, ranch hand or long-haul truck driver, that occasional moment when it all clicks and you feel complete. And a little of it goes a long way. Too much and you wind up jabbering on a street corner about the aliens coming to save humanity, which isn't happening. And is unlikely to happen. But there's something much better out there available to one and all when their hearts and eyes and ears are open. Here's a postcard from Ashland, Oregon. Sometimes when I'm working, I watch the lizards attempt to mate. The big ones are boys, I assume. They kind of... This part's hard to read, sorry. They do something like a dog. And the girl lizard inevitably runs away completely unimpressed. How are there so many lizards out there? Love from Norm. Now here's a beautiful old postcard. It's a panorama of the Central Park in Guadalajara, Mexico. Handle with care. It is old and blemished, like all of us oldsters inside and out. The desert's getting hot, but happiness is present among the Joshua trees, amigo. Keep broadcasting. Signed, Esteban Fernandez. Hey, thanks for sending that from Guadalajara. Here's an update from my comrade Zinko at Tasajara, the Zen monastery in the mountains of Monterey, which is one of my favorite places up there. After a strange dream brought me west to this deep canyon, I am truly leaving home and taking up the way. My ordination this Saturday begins another journey. Thanks to Desert Oracle, I've learned much about loving our world, even the parts that seem unwanted. The chaparral was a private, hot, scratchy, poison oaky personal hell for me at first, as it was to the Padres when they chased the Esalon into the Santa Lucias. But it has romanced me as the desert won you. Both the landscape and the lore, Dark Watchers, Al Clark and his secret gold mine, the introduction of virile crawdads to Tasajara Creek. They connect us in time and place. Deep bows from Zenko. A happy ordination to you, friend. I hope to see you up there before too long. A true fact is that I spent some time as a guest at Tasajara in the weeks I was making up this whole enterprise here in the desert, Desert Oracle. I stayed with the Catholic monks above Big Sur, too. Any port in a storm. Now here's a picture postcard of my favorite town in California. With the snow-capped Sierras rising over the desert floor and a cowboy longingly gazing at a golden trout jumping from the creek. That's Bishop. Thank you for the Great Basin episode. I could not agree more and find your storytelling inspirational. David Wilson in Phoenix. And thanks to everybody at KZMU in Moab who sent this nice Grand Canyon card. Signed by Crystal and Big Bass and the whole crew. On Saturday nights at 9 p.m., KZMU, that's when you'll hear Desert Oracle in and around Moab, Castle Valley, and the Slick Rock Country. From Amboy to Zizix and across the great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio broadcasting from Joshua Tree. I want to tell you about the live shows we are doing the weekend of July 10 and 11. The first time a show will be performed at Theater 29 and 29 Palms since the pandemic began, way back in whatever year that was. Saturday night, the 10th, is just about sold out, last I checked. And Sunday had a few more tickets available, so make sure you get your tickets in advance. Go to DesertOracle.com, click Events. Because it's unlikely you will find any seats remaining if you just show up. And then what will you do? I guess you could go to the bowling alley or go to the casino. But you'd probably rather come to the show if that's why you have come to 29 Palms. ...7 p.m. with Red, Blue, Black, Silver doing live soundscapes. Doors at 6:30, is that right? Nobody knows. Nobody knows anything. Figure, yeah, 6:30. Oh, and guess what? It's National UFO Day. Wait, is it National or World UFO Day? Nobody knows. In any case, UFOs do not follow the laws or boundaries of any nation state, so pretty much every day and night is World UFO Day. And before too long, we are going to get better at taking these visions and apparitions the right way and talking about them in a better way. We used to know how to talk about such things until very recently in human history, until we got bamboozled into giving up all the sacred spaces of daily life. But don't worry, we're going to get it all back. Thanks for listening, and good night from the Voice of the Desert.
Well, that's not thunder in the background. That is a jet. And there's also been a lot of small planes and helicopters going by this morning. So I hope that doesn't mean fire season is starting here. Anyway, remember that last episode was a classic one. So any events that Ken mentioned are long gone. My thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio, and thank you for listening and supporting KGBM. I'd like to hear your stories of travels in our region this summer. If you haven't already left me a message, please do now. And my voicemail is at 406-404-6246. And this program is broadcast on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, and it streams online at kgbm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgbm.org website. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Until then, keep doing good things, stay well, and sweet dreams. We will get through this present day's troubles, too. I'll see you next week.